KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KABU proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society's concert series, featuring Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, an ensemble from the worlds of jazz and folk music. The show is Friday, February 21st, 7:30 p.m., at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Sam Ryder has been a U.S. State Department musical ambassador, taking his accordion to at least six nations. For 6 years, Ryder has been band leader for jazz at the Lincoln Center's youth program. The Human Hands feature the violin stylings of Oregonian Alex Hargraves. For more information about the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hope we don't get fooled again. This has been one too many times, Joe.
What do you mean, fooled again? I've never been fooled.
Oh, okay.
No, really.
You're the only one, then.
No, I have a dark view of the world, so I can't get fooled.
Can't get fooled?
Can't get fooled.
Okay, in that case, will you just mourn with me, then?
Will you join me in mourning? I've been in mourning since the day I was mourning. Sorry. All right, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe. I'm Joe. The number to call to be on the air, because it is talk radio, is 231-8187.
And why are we mourning? I'm so glad I asked myself.
Why are we mourning?
We're mourning the death of representative democracy as we know it.
Yeah, and we're mourning. I don't know how I feel about this, but the Republican Party used to, in my mind as a kind of young person, was a kind of a, you know, right-wing conservative party that kept a check on a liberally kind of sort of Rooseveltian left-wingish sort of maybe kind of Democratic Party, except that it had a southern wing that was racist and so on. Well, in that context, in that bizarre world, we now have a Republican Party which every single man and woman who is elected in it in the national context, including of course the president, has had their intelligence removed.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. No, every one of them had to go into a room where they had a thing that sucked out.
No,
their
I don't
brain.
Think that's what was removed.
What was removed?
Their backbones, their spine.
Okay, well, the whole thing, the whole neural system.
Yeah, the whole central nervous system.
It's a wonder that they can move around.
They're not just automatons.
They shouldn't even be able to stand up.
Implanted by Facebook.
Facebook.
I just picked up,
a target at random.
Yeah, that's right. A gloomy sort of overarching technocratic monstrosity. Well, Facebook. There you go.
Yeah, science fiction, man.
What? So what are we talking about exactly?
I don't know.
No, I'm going to tell you. I'm glad I asked myself again.
Okay.
This is a morning of rhetorical questions here on the Abe and Joe Show.
The morning of rhetorical questions, ladies and gentlemen.
So unless you've been
hiding
under a rock, you knew that for the third time in American history, you were undergoing an impeachment trial of a sitting president.
Yeah.
Unlike past impeachment trials, and indeed, unlike any definition of the word trial, as it's commonly understood by people everywhere on the planet.
Except Alice in Wonderland.
Okay. Technically not on the planet. Technically down the rabbit hole, but... That's another story entirely.
Yes.
Okay. This was not a trial that resembled anything like any other sort of trial. Trials have witnesses and evidence.
Yeah.
And a procedure.
Yes.
But this one is not going to have that.
No.
Last week, the Senate Republicans voted to not hear any additional evidence or hear from any additional witnesses besides the stuff compiled in the House's report.
I love the fact that Republican senators, several of them, are saying, yeah, he's guilty, but we're not going to do nothing about it.
Yeah. It's so craven. I can't. You might tell I'm a little frustrated this morning.
You seem angry.
Right.
Not only
because of the travesty of justice.
You seem loud.
I'm pissed off, Joe. Pissed off. Not only because of the travesty of justice that's unfolding before our eyes, not because of the abandonment of all precedent, even predating the establishment of this republic. Of course, our trials, our system of jurisprudence is modeled after English common law, which enshrines things like evidence, procedure, witnesses. We're talking about a Western tradition going back hundreds of years. And burning witches. Actually, a nice witch burning would have spruced this trial up. I might even be willing to swap the evidence and witnesses for a nice burning, maybe of someone from Kentucky. Can we arrange that?
You mean you want to burn the turtle?
I do.
That's a crime.
You just
uttered a crime. You're
so
done.
Were
That's
a
it.
Number of crimes that were simply glossed over by the Senate Republicans. Now, am I spewing hyperbole this morning? He asked again rhetorically. No, I am not.
I'm going to stand back.
Because the power of impeachment, as outlined in the Constitution and then defended vigorously in several Federalist Papers by Alexander Hamilton and James Madison, the process of impeachment is a necessary means to check the abuse of power by all sorts of people, including and up to the President of the United States.
Right.
Right. So the Senate Republicans, having abrogated this responsibility, have legitimized the criminal behavior of a criminal president, and going forward forever and ever, whatever the president wants to do, according to the wonderfully incisive legal argument made by his counsel, Alan Dershowitz, can do whatever the hell he wants as long as he deems it in the public interest. Why? Because, according to Dershowitz, if you're running for office, anything you do is by definition in the public interest. So the president can free to solicit aid from a foreign power to game an American election. And let's not forget, that's what we're talking about here. President Trump is trying to cheat again on the upcoming election, and the Senate Republicans said, that's okay.
Yes. Now, are you...
not even close, but I'll give you a chance.
Have you vented adequately? Let me just say this. You're right.
That's okay.
That's all I wanted to say. You're
Thank
absolutely
you for
right.
Tuning in.
You're,
this has been
yeah.
the
Your Chosen. Outrage is not misplaced. Your sense of moral dismay is not misplaced. Your observations are not wrong. This is very scary. The only real question is an intellectual one. Has it always been this way and we've just been stupid?
No, that's not the only real question. And it's not simply an intellectual exercise. What the hell are you? Get out of here. Get out of here. That's nonsense. A posturing. Let me hand down my dictum from high atop my ivory tower for I, Dr. Joe Uris, know how it should be. All right, so your question, hasn't it always been this way? Well, you know, that, of course, is an interesting question, but not sufficient. All right, so let's look back upon the broad sweep of American history. No, it has not always been sunshine and roses. Everything from slavery to manifest destiny to Jim Crow to the suppression of the female vote to the struggle for the oppression of people struggling for civil rights and on and on and on through the Iran-Contra scandal, through all these unnecessary wars of the 20th century.
How about late stage capitalism?
Late stage capitalism. What I'm trying to spell out for you today, so that you're not tempted to call up and rebut me with it, is that no, the story of American democracy is an imperfect one. Far from perfect. Can we all stipulate to that?
Oh, I think so.
Okay. There is a parade of horrors embedded in our history. Can we all stipulate to that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. We can also stipulate to this, that we have incessantly worked to make it better, to make a more perfect union. It is right there in the preamble to the Constitution. We are working to perfect union.
Who is
citizens
the we?
Of the United States, Joe?
I don't buy
with
that.
Every generation, the circle of equals has grown. We have extended the franchise first to formerly enslaved persons, then to all males, and finally, at long last, to all people.
Well, property owners earlier on.
Earlier on, yes. The point I'm trying to make
after we tried to kill off the indigenous people.
We have worked incessantly to make this a more perfect union. And so for the congressional Republicans, the Senate Republicans, to do this is to turn their back on that central narrative of American life.
Okay, what's the this? What's the this? Make it specific.
For the Senate Republicans to rubber stamp the president's behavior and affirm that cheating on an election is acceptable is an abrogation of their constitutional duty.
I agree.
And quite possibly a dagger in the heart of representative democracy as we have come to understand
it. I would go further. I would call it treason.
I would call it treason as well.
None dare call it treason. That's a right-wing thing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that it's not hard to find a clown with fascist values and beliefs who can, after a few years on TV, being a host of a bull you-know-what show, mm-hmm. to become the president of the United States. Not that hard. And this is very scary in its totality. Now we got this guy. I'm going to make a horrible bet. I'm going to bet that the Democrats will totally screw up this election and that the Republican guy, the weird fellow with the fake hair and the absolute immorality, will again be president of the United States. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's quite possible. He's free to cheat.
Free to cheat.
To continue his cheating.
Yeah.
Now, many people on the right...
Oh, tonight, everybody, you should listen in to his crowning glory speech.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that's not falling completely into place for him is I'm sure that he had hoped that he would already have been exonerated by the Stalinist show trial in the U.S. Capitol, and he would be able to make this speech tonight saying, I have been exonerated.
No, that's funny. It is like a Stalinist show trial.
It's very much like a Stalinist show trial.
How weird.
But at least they had witnesses and evidence, however rigged. This yeah. is worse than a Stalinist show trial.
But there was no torture, unlike the Soviet Union.
Well, I felt pretty tortured.
Oh.
Hey, okay, that wasn't fair.
Gosh.
All right. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm sure I'm not the only one angry this morning. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or tweet at us at HonestAbe72.
Well, I'm so dark-minded that I'm not even angry. I'm just depressed. Let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I feel totally the same way, but I just want to correct you, I think, because I was under the impression that many of the Republicans didn't say what he did was okay. They said, in fact, many of them did say what he did was not okay, but it didn't rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
You've got a point. You've got a point.
Okay. I just wanted to...
No. That's more accurate, though. The number of them that were willing to say that was very small.
Yeah, I agree with you that that's what they said. Needless to say, I don't agree with that opinion.
Well, mainly the reason why they said it was because they had to go home and try to get reelected. So I'm totally bitterly cynical about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You're right. They several of them said, "Yeah, he's guilty, but so what?"
I mean, isn't that what Lamar Alexander said?
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
No, he did say that. In fact, others have said it quieter or in different ways.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that these people not only have sold their souls, but to a great extent their womanhood or manhood in the process.
Right. I agree. All right, well, keep ranting away. I just want to make sure you're accurate.
I appreciate it. I appreciate your comment about my partner's upsetness.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening here, it's fitting a pattern, okay? It's fitting a pattern as each of these, as our norms and our institutions have been systematically degraded over the past several decades, there's a pattern that happens here, right? The right wing will do something. It's illegal. immoral, what have you. And their first response is always, it never happened, right? Then as more evidence comes to light, it's happened, but it didn't happen the way you said it did. And then finally, then next is, it happened, but it wasn't illegal.
Well,
right? And no, there's a couple more stages here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is kind of like the stages of grief.
Cooper Ross is turning over. Then they say it happened,
but it wasn't illegal. Then they say it happened, it was illegal, but there's nothing you can do about it. And then finally, in full Nazi mode, it happened, we're proud of it, and you're a traitor for even questioning it.
Well,
that's the pattern.
Well, that is the pattern, except that I would argue that all of this has its roots in the incomplete revolution that was begun in 1776, etc.
Well, it has its roots in the tendency of some human beings to want to be the biggest monkey in the room, to have power and status and dominance over others. That is the root of this problem, right? So now I'm going to wax a little bit lyrical about the founding of the American Republic. I know that rubs some of you the wrong way, but here I'm going to do it anyway, right? So the inherent genius of the American Constitution, you can argue about whether or not its genius holds up over time. But the revolutionary idea was, we are going to take this tendency to seek dominance, this tendency to seek status and power and dominance over others, and we are going to make sure that it is not concentrated in any one person. In fact, we're going to take steps to make sure that it is spread out across a great number of people, that we are going to divide the functions of government. And within those divisions, we are going to devolve that power onto many different people so that it doesn't become concentrated in one set of hands, right? That is the genius behind separation of powers and the system of checks and balances that we have.
And the reason for that was because we came out of the English monarchy.
We came out of the English monarchy, precisely.
Yes.
So what the actions of the Senate Republicans last week did was to reverse that, was to concentrate and continue the concentration of power in one set of hands, the chief executives.
A clown yet.
And this continues a trend, lest we are tempted to blame this all on Trump. This continues a trend that has gone on since the Second World War, which is an increasingly powerful chief executive.
Yeah. In fact, there were articles. I remember when I was in high school, there were articles talking about the imperial presidency.
Yeah.
Predicting indeed. The very thing we're seeing.
Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah. Are you calmed down a little
bit? No. James, good morning.
Good morning. It's hard to know where to begin with you guys. I mean, you guys
speak. You got to know where to begin,
yeah,
man.
Come on, James. You ready to play or not? Otherwise, we'll move on.
An entirely different language. Well, I'm trying to connect with you guys, and you're like on another planet.
What planet? James, what planet are you on?
What planet am I on?
Yeah. You say we're on a different planet. What's your planet?
Well, I am in a place where I see the Republican Party and the Democratic Party as being a big duopoly, and they're all just putting on a big charade, and this is all just a show to keep us all running around in circles like a bunch of idiots.
Yes, some of us are acting like idiots.
Well,
can't argue with you there.
It's hard to argue that there's idiocy abroad. The game's afoot, as Sherlock Holmes once said. I mean, really, yeah, he's not wrong, except that's an inadequate analysis. And your anger is not misplaced, Abe, but in fact, my position is that this is a slowly occurring darkness that has been waiting for its opportunity, for its moment to arrive, as the Beatles said in a lovely song called Blackbird. Mixed metaphor being my favorite
James,
thing.
James, are you still there?
No, he's gone.
Okay, he's gone. Good. Who's next? George.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning.
I was listening to you equating Nazism and Stalinism.
And no, I didn't do that. No, I didn't do that.
Well, I heard you using the word Stalinism and then Nazism, and I don't know.
No,
maybe
here's what
aren't.
I said. No, George, I think it's important we're accurate today. On of all days, we need to be accurate. I compared the Senate trial to a Stalinist show trial, and I compared the behavior of the American right wing to fascism. That's what I did.
Okay.
I wasn't equating the two.
Okay. But it's class rule, and however you puff up the Constitution, it was class rule, and it's continuing. I would like to add also that there is a book about Stalinism and Stalin by a scholar named Grover Fur,
okay,
pointing out...
George, every time you call up, you recommend books to us, which is lovely. But I don't know that it moves the conversation along in any particular way, because we don't have time to pause and read books during a radio show. Thank you for calling, Joe.
Well, you're really on a tear, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. John, good morning.
Hello.
Hello.
This is what I think was going on. A lot of these senators that were really vocal about, you know, defending Trump and all this whole thing are from Dixie. And I have a little bit of a background on it because my mom's from Arkansas. And down there in their culture, it's about get back. See, this when this Alexander guy, you know, from Tennessee, was he's retiring, okay? So why should he hold up any
wait, I don't think he's from Tennessee, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I thought he was from Lamar Alexander.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, well, whatever. Tennessee. But I'm saying that the culture down there, I think that some of these senators are intimidated by their constituents. You know, like especially deep red states, they're going to have in front of their front porch, a lot of people in pickups, you know, intimidating. They're like, I'm going to kill your little dog, you know, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're really afraid of their own constituents.
I'm going to kill your little dog?
Yeah, like in Wizard of Oz, you know, and the little dog too. So, well, I'm just saying that they just feel like they're being intimidated by their constituents.
I really don't buy that. I think they're intimidated by the fact that the party would withdraw its support and they would lose their power.
No, yeah, I understand that, but if, you know, I'm just going by my own personal experience of what the culture is down there. That's all I'm trying
and
to
by
say.
The way, I kind of want to challenge a little bit of that. Because I've had I worked in the civil rights movement way back, and I also had experiences in the South where ordinary people, when I was coming through the United States in a U-drive car and so on, and the car broke down, people were very nice. They fed us. They found parts for the car for us. I don't like to brand the culture of the South with a notion that they are dehumanizing or mean people. I don't think that's the case. I think the belief systems are wrong in many cases, but in fact, the possibility of humanity in that world still exists and has displayed itself in various ways.
Well, I just had personal experiences.
I understand.
Yeah, and first cousins that told me that, you know, they were
well, that first cousin thing, you know, that's a weird thing.
Yeah, well, I know everybody's related down there, right? Bye.
Hey, thanks for the call. I think you're spot on. I think congressional Republicans are afraid of their constituents, because look back to the 2016 presidential campaign. Essentially, Donald Trump was nominated by the worst element of the American electorate.
Yeah.
I can say that unambiguously.
Yeah.
The worst element of the American electorate.
Yeah.
They were sufficient to catapult him to the presidential nomination.
Yeah.
And then through a quirk of our antiquated electoral system.
And the incompetence of the Democrats.
Yeah, and a poorly run opposition campaign. Now he is improbably our president. And I think Republicans in Congress are looking around and going, electorally, we cannot afford to write off the feelings of that horrible piece of the electorate that nominated Trump. Right? And they don't have the backbone to not care about that.
Well, the rule of politics has always been to win. And this is the ultimate and most extreme example of the absurdity of that.
Well, it's not fundamentally absurd, right? Because in order to govern, you need to win an election.
It is absurd. No, it is absurd, because if we are looking at building a more perfect union, building a more just society, this process, this way of doing it, this whole thing is cataclysmically wrong, and we can see how it has, stage by stage, step by step, led to the incredible bizarreness of a stupid fascist president.
Yeah, it did lead to that incredible
bizarreness. And stupid. The key word here is not just, he's not cunning. He's stupid.
Yeah. And there's one other element, a crucial element that I omitted when I was summing up what led to Trump's victory. We cannot ignore the impact of voter suppression.
Oh, no, we shouldn't.
On our political system.
Well, that's always been a great tradition in America.
It's been a great tradition in America, and it is ongoing, and it will be a factor this time. And now that the president has been given carte blanche to do whatever he wants, the mind reels when you consider what might actually transpire between now and November.
Well, a lot of stuff has happened. I mean, he's now not letting people from other countries come here to study. Mm-hmm. He's putting down and going to reduce, if he gets his way, the role of NATO. He's going to take away all the things that created the peace after World War II.
Yes. He's also constructed a network of concentration camps near our southern border.
Yeah, let's not forget that.
At which to house undocumented people trying to cross the border.
Particularly children.
Particularly children who, of course, have been separated from their families in a horrific chronicle that we have talked about repeatedly on this program. It's a bad situation, Joe, and it's poised to get even worse. Now, I want you to consider this. Probably tomorrow, the Senate is going to vote to completely exonerate the president from the charges upon which he was impeached.
Yeah, but tonight he's going to make his brilliant speech.
He's going to make his brilliant speech. He's going to foreshadow that exoneration. He's going to beat his chest. He's going to crow. And his supporters are going to spend the next several months doing the very same thing. Now, I want you to cast your mind forward in time to election night in November. I can see a large number of Trump supporters showing up at polling places with guns.
No, no.
And intimidating people and trying to stop them from casting their vote.
No.
You don't think that happened last time, Joe?
Well, the gun part is what I don't believe.
Okay.
Intimidation, it's
going to get bad. All rules of decorum, all the norms that have previously governed our democratic behavior are going to be tossed out the window. It is going to get ugly. Now, I also want you to consider this prospect. Imagine now that Trump loses a very close or a contested election.
Okay.
Do you think that he is going to step aside and peacefully hand over power?
Oh, no. I don't think that
at
all.
Do you think his heavily armed supporters are going to want him to peacefully step aside and hand over power?
I'm not sure who they are and how many of them are really actually willing to go.
Oh, okay.
The
next time the Proud Boys come to town, you can come down to the waterfront and meet them. I've met them. There's lovely people on both sides, Joe.
Well, I didn't want to get into this, but the whole Proud Boy phenomenon was, and I have to say this, made more significant by the opposition to it. It was a bad strategy to begin with.
Oh, I completely disagree. Are you telling me that Nazis should just walk on our streets unopposed?
I think there's ways to oppose them without getting into a fight, physical
fight.
Well,
yeah, that's certainly true.
I think nonviolence always wins.
And most people, most right-thinking people, do oppose them without using violent tactics.
I think turning your back on them, having a formal renunciation in large numbers, is the most effective way to deal with them. I'm not saying you don't show up. I'm saying you show up obviously being nonviolent.
All right. Stanley writes to the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, in 1967, Howard Zinn wrote a book entitled Disobedience and Democracy, Nine Fallacies on Law and Order.
Yeah, no, that's a good book.
It is. In a response to Supreme Court Justice Abe Fortas's comments on the ongoing demonstrations with regard to the civil rights struggles and the anti-war movement. The fifth of Zinn's fallacies is that the political structure and procedures of the United States are adequate as they stand to remedy the ills of our society. That was in 1967, and it's not getting any better. But the real issue is, what are we going to do about it? What will replace it? Because it is obvious that it cannot be reformed. I don't know that that's necessarily obvious. I would go back to the preamble of the Constitution, which instructs us to work to create a more perfect union. We can address the flaws in our norms and institutions. We can address them. And I think that's really our best recourse at this time. Because, you know, it's tempting in a perfect world to say, let's just hold another constitutional convention and we can come out of it with this wonderfully enlightened document for the 21st century. But I'm telling you, as soon as the next constitutional convention is announced, Exxon and Mobil and Facebook and Intel and Apple are going to go about the business of buying up delegates to that constitutional convention. And whatever document comes out of it, it's going to be entirely subservient to the whims of the ruling class.
You know what's weird?
What's weird?
This is a small thing. But you're more angry and more radical on this issue than I am.
Is that weird?
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh.
Sorry.
We've been doing this together for some time.
I know. You just can't tell the players without a program.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 Alternative Radio, Princeton University Assistant Professor Kianga Yamada-Taylor, apologies for pronunciation, speaks about the power of social movements. At 10, it's Flashpoints, where Dennis Bernstein looks at the fact that as Iowans kick off the 20... We haven't even talked about the Iowa caucus yet.
I don't understand. I don't understand the caucus concept. I don't understand why it starts in Iowa. I think it's all bad.
All right, let me finish this, and we'll get to that.
Okay.
As Iowans kick off the 2020 election season, the Democratic National Committee heads further right. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. May Roberts speaks with Shalonda Sims, the founder and director of World Stage Theater and Black History Festival Northwest, and Oluyinka Akinjiola of the Rejoice Diaspora Dance Theater. Again, apologies for pronunciation.
Oh, you did pretty good there.
And at 11:30 Art Focus, we hear from Portland multidisciplinary artist David Eckert about his new show, Placards and Placeholders. All this and more coming up on KBOO.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Let's take a couple calls, and then we'll talk about the Iowa caucus.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to Joe.
Hey, Joe. You're on the air. 231-8187.
Thank you. I believe it's time for us to take a closer look at breaking the country apart.
What?
No, hear me out, please. We have five very distinct regions in this country. We have the West Coast. We have the West, from the Rockies to the Pacific Crest Trail. We have the Midwest, we have the South, and we have the Northeast. All of these regions have very distinct cultures. They have their own ambitions, their way of doing things, and I believe that when our country was founded, we had X number of people, but we have grown so big and so large that we are unable to get people on the same page in any kind of reasonable fashion, and that we need to look at how do we divide this up so that the regions get what they need. We no longer need to be this superpower that shows our imperialism throughout the planet. And let's become regions that can function and self-serve government for the people in those particular
regions. Well, aside from the fact that and I fundamentally don't agree with that because of the real politic of the world, aside from that, how the hell do you imagine that to happen?
Well, you need something very groundbreaking and similar to what happened a couple hundred years ago and that we come to terms with. We need to function very differently.
Okay.
So I just wanted to throw that out there because all we seem to do is argue with each other and we come up with 50%, 50%. And I know, and I have been through every state in the country by driving through, and I recognize that we have good people in every region, but we also have such strong particular interests that we are never going to get 320, 30 million people even close to being on the same page anymore.
All right, it's an interesting thought. I'm not going to get into an argument with you about it because it's going to be irrelevant.
Okay.
But I appreciate the idea. Thanks for the call.
Let's go to Robbie.
All right, Robbie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing this morning?
Weird.
Good morning.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's a weird morning, but I wanted to tell the last caller, they're called bioregions, and the one in the Pacific Northwest is called Cascadia.
Right. Yeah.
But the bioregion is essentially what he's talking about with the five to six. I think there's actually six or seven different regions, but they've been determined as bioregions because
right.
they can self-sustain each other anyway, he should look into that. But I wanted to bring up, this Iowa stuff is ridiculous. And I got to say, I don't see how we are supposed to be like so upset at Donald Trump for asking foreign powers to influence our region, because even if we didn't have that going on, we don't have fair democratic elections because of the DNC. The DNC is literally rigging an election. But for some reason, I should be concerned about fake news being published by, you know, WikiLeaks or bots when we don't even have an actual election.
So wait a minute.
So you should be concerned about both.
You're gonna demonize the Democratic National Committee in particular?
They're rigging an election.
How do you mean rig? This is a definitional question, but I think it's important. What do you mean by rigging?
In 2016, you talked about voter suppression, right? Are you aware that when the voter purge happened in 2016, it only affected the primaries? People got provisional ballots because they were re-registered as a Republican?
I'm not sure that's true, but okay.
It is true. No, it's very true.
Okay.
You should look it up.
Okay.
The voter purging happened in California. It happened in New York. It happened in Arizona. It happened in Illinois in 2016. The DNC literally purged voters, changed them to Republicans. And when they showed up, people who didn't realize they were given a provisional ballot weren't voted. They were not counted.
Now, logically, why did the Democratic Party do that?
Because they did it to the Bernie Sanders.
Oh, so this was all about defeating Bernie?
Absolutely. Are you kidding? Or look at the news. Look at how Bernie was winning in the polls in the weeks coming up to Iowa, and they didn't even mention it. They said he was in a tie with Biden. We can go back and forth and say, oh, that was because there was only a couple points here and there. But no, the news is obviously tilting us, right? Do you know the Bernie blackout?
It's clear the mainstream media does not give Bernie this kind of coverage that a front runner should necessarily receive. Hang on a second. It's also true that a lot of centrist pundits on TV and on the web have expressed concern about the prospect that Bernie might actually be the Democrat.
Well, in fact, I'll agree with you.
The establishment does not want Bernie.
I'm going to interrupt both of you because this is important. The fact of the matter is that the Democratic Party is uncomfortable ever since Roosevelt with being a party of liberal progressivism. And this is a real problem.
Even if that's what they vote for, it's okay to rig the election.
Well, it's never okay to rig an election.
I'm not exactly sure what the point of your argument is here. Yes, I think we're all in agreement that rigging elections is bad, but you seem to think You seem to suggest, the whole thrust of your call seemed to suggest that we should not be worried about what the president is doing vis-a-vis soliciting foreign governments, and instead we should be worried about rigging elections. I'm submitting to you that we should be concerned about both of them.
Okay, so let's be concerned about both of them for a minute. What happened in Iowa last night? They changed the rules. They're not giving the delegates to Bernie. They've literally suppressed it. And at my point is, why should we be concerned about a foreign entity?
Yeah, we don't know.
We can't even have a fair election as it stands.
We don't know yet what exactly happened in Iowa.
It's important to understand that it's important.
Thank you for the call.
There is an intervention here of technology, which may or may not been planned. It's a little early to say that what is being predicted is the case. As to the question of whether or not Bernie is going to be screwed out, I don't know what else to call it, of the nomination, there's a lot of people in what is called the Democratic Party, which, like the old Republican Party, is sort of whether or not that party is going to have the courage to recognize the value of being a social democratic party. And I'm with you, and I'm with many people who think that we're so afraid of being true to what needs to be done that we will instead go with what we think to be safe, which in this case probably is good old Joe Biden, who, from my perspective, seems way past prime and never having in his career been anything but a sort of a go-along guy from a state which is run by corporate interests.
Okay. Now, with regard to what's happening in Iowa.
Yes.
Well, first of all, as I think most people realize, the Iowa caucus represents the first votes cast in the 2020.
And that should never have happened.
No, it's really silly. I don't know why we look to a state that's 90% white and largely rural to determine how the general public feels about a field of candidates. It's silly. It's dumb. And the process itself, I believe, is inherently fraught. And here's what I mean. It's a caucus state, which means that your vote is not cast in secret. What people do is they congregate in public spaces, like gymnasiums, for example, and people get up.
What do you have against gymnasiums?
Well, let me finish. People get up. Are you an athletic supporter or an athlete? All right, never mind.
really let that one go.
Okay. People get together in these places, and people come out and they talk in favor of respective candidates, right?
Yeah.
People make arguments. There's a dialogue. There's a back and forth. And at some point, people get up and they physically divide themselves, right? They move to different parts of the room.
Yeah.
And then there's a physical count of where people's bodies are standing, and that's how it's determined who eventually wins the caucus.
There's nothing inherently wrong with that.
Yes, there is.
Well, let me finish. If it weren't for the fact that it's the first contest.
No, there is something inherently wrong with it.
It's not secret.
Now, there's much, I think, to be admired In the coming together of people in a common space and the give and take around the various candidates, I think that's all good and healthy. The problem is that the process is inherently vulnerable to peer pressure and the passions of the moment.
Well, actually, I agree.
Intimidation.
I agree
yes.
with you.
Yes. Now, if they did everything the same way, except that when it was time to vote, instead of moving to a different part of the room, if you were then able to cast a secret ballot, everything would be fine.
Yes.
But because the process is vulnerable to peer pressure in the moment, I think it's an inherently flawed process.
No, I agree. And I think the peer pressure and the pressure of your neighbor and so on really makes it bad. The whole reason for a secret ballot, which, by the way, was not the case until around 1900. The whole idea of a secret ballot is key to our kind of democracy.
Absolutely true.
And to start with this caucusing, well, it's an Alice in Wonderland thing where they have a caucus race.
Indeed. And we don't even have results from last night. There was a smartphone app that was put into play to tabulate the results across the state. Something has gone wrong, apparently, with that app. State party officials are saying it was a coding issue, that it was not a result of hacking. But
they don't know that.
Well, that's what they're saying as of right now.
Yeah.
And now we have a situation where we don't know the outcome of the first caucus of the presidential campaign. It was amusing, though, if you were following along last night, when each of the candidates in turn came out and basically made a victory speech one after another.
Really?
Which was amusing.
Well, I liked who I liked. I don't want to push a candidate.
Let's go back to the phones. Bill, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
There's something that's been going through my mind here. You know, the Republicans have lots of money and think tanks and all that. I think what they've done is turn the Democratic Party into the old Republican Party, and they've made the Republican Party this nuts. And the idea is to get the people against the Republican Party and vote for this Democratic Party that's really the Republican Party. Okay, that's it.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for the idea. I think that the two-party system has always been relatively corrupted, that the only time significantly that the Democratic Party was a party of social democracy was during the crisis of the Great Depression and then World War II. That's what I think.
And for a few decades after.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
The Great Society. Yeah, the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, kind of.
A little bit. I think you're downplaying what were monumental achievements.
Okay.
By a progressive government.
I won't argue.
Okay. All right, who's next? Don, good morning. What's on your mind, Don?
Wait a second. Are you talking about Don or John?
Well, which one are you?
I'm John, and I just got myself in the queue.
Welcome, John. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is, first, thank you both for stirring the pot again. I always enjoy it. And I just wanted to throw in a few other things that people tend to forget about Iowa, and A, that it is right in the center of the state, the center of the country. It is both liberal and conservative. Farmers, despite all the talk, very rich. They support education. They have the highest per capita of literacy rate.
Yep, that's true.
In the country. And I grew up in the Great Lakes area, Detroit, and I wound up in Iowa getting a degree, and I put myself through school by being a carpenter. I'm a retired union carpenter, and when I transferred my book to Portland, they were surprised that the wage difference was 15 cents an hour. And so it's not a hick place by any shake of a lamb's tail or whatever you want to call it, but they were surprised. And there's a lot of heavy industry there. There's a labor group, and yes, it is a white group. And that part's true too. So here we are, a bunch of white guys in Portland, and a pretty racist state in itself, arguing the same thing. The point being is it's a good place to start with, because linguistically, Wait.
No, it's not a good place to start with.
Here's our point, and I'm not sure you're following this, but maybe you are. it's fine to use a caucus model in the course of a election if it were not the starting place for a decision of national significance. It would be just a little curiosity and entertaining if it took place, let's say, two-thirds of the way into the process. But starting with that distorts the entire process and it creates a situation where you don't really know what the hell's going on in the
nation.
Well,
that's true. That's the whole idea of the caucus part. I don't understand the caucus either. But
well, that's what we're talking about, man. We're not talking about Iowa per se.
I understand, but the fact we'll turn it into a primary then in the first, but just historically, I was just saying that it is a good starting point in that regard because we have a strange, interesting mix of the old power, whatever you want to call it, that too. I mean, the white power, which is also in advance, but...
Since you brought up white power, I want to make a point that I think is very important. A large part of the reactionary drive that's going on right now that makes Trump powerful is the fear of a white nation about the idea of a nation of peoples, many peoples, of color and of different values. It is demographically the case that the United States is changing from being at least nominally a white Protestant or even Catholic nation into a nation of multiple different ethnicities and values and beliefs, and that is what is behind a lot of the enormous paranoia that we see among working people and a lot of white people just generally in many parts of the country. And it's unfortunate. And it's partially due to a very poor educational system. Anyway, I needed to make that point. So,
well, no, I agree with you 100%. And just, I can tell you that there was an awful lot of Mexican immigrants doing all the dirty, dumb stuff there as it is here in the fields. And it's just as important there as it is here and everywhere that we are a unified country.
I really have to let you go because you're getting into an area of basically stereotypes which are not particularly relevant at this point in history. Yes, there is much labor, stoop labor, that is done by persons who speak Spanish as their first language, but there are also lots of poor white people doing the same work. And when we start talking about a notion of who the people who speak Spanish are, in terms of the workforce, we're missing a lot of history and a lot of reality.
Well, indeed. And that's not what we're talking about today in any event.
Okay.
I think our problems, speaking for myself, and I believe Joe probably shares this opinion, the problems with the Iowa caucus have nothing to do with what inherently Iowa is, its literacy rate or anything like that. The problem is that it's not representative.
And it's not democratic.
And it's not democratic.
Little d.
And the caller said it's a good place to start. Well, I disagree. I don't think we should start in any one place. Why not just have a nationwide primary? You know, that by the time the Oregon primary comes around, the race is all but decided. The nomination is all but decided.
Yes.
Any votes we cast here really don't make any difference in choosing the nominee. That itself is undemocratic. I say have all the primaries... or caucuses or whatever you want, fix the problem with the caucuses first. Have them all on the same day.
Well, we can discuss
that. In fact, here, while I'm at it, while I'm on my soapbox, shorten the entire election season to 60 days. We'll have we'll have a nationwide primary exactly 2 months before the general election.
Well, I'm not against that. And I also think that the whole process of extended election, which really takes place from the day whoever the hell is elected to presidency to the next election, is really very stupid and really colors the politics of the society unduly.
And it's rife for corruption.
Yeah. Well, we see that.
We do indeed. All right. Let's go to Arthur.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I just want to make a little point about secrecy in the voting process. I've got a degree in mathematics, and all these apps that we use in the voting, they can all be hacked.
Right,
true. They can be hacked by the NSA and the CIA, no problem, because number theory, which is the branch of mathematics on code busting, on sneaking into people's phone, The NSA and the CIA have hired more number theorists than any other institutions, because what they do is they want to make sure that Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, General Atomics, and Boeing, all the weapons manufacturers, continue to become profitable. And so all this election meddling that you're talking about, especially in Iowa, we just saw it live, that's strictly internally done to keep the war machine going. And I'll take my comments off air if you disagree with that. Thank you.
Well, disagree or agree, it's an interesting point.
Yeah. And really, we don't know what happened in Iowa. Let's be very clear.
No, it's really too early to tell, and I'm not sure we're going to know, period.
Yeah. It's very tempting to think that the establishment Democratic Party saw a massive Bernie Sanders victory and freaked out. That's one possible explanation, but we don't know.
No, and that is a possible explanation. It isn't necessarily the best explanation. It may simply be, as the rules of Morgan's canon, et cetera, are, what can go wrong will go wrong.
The Morgan's canon?
Never mind.
Murphy's Law.
Same difference.
No. Let's go to Brian.
Oh, hi. Oh, that was quick.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I was listening to the news last night and this morning and just shaking my head at the what seems like total ineptness, and it's just going to throw all kinds of ammunition to Trump, and I'm sure he's going to make the most out of it. And then I found out that the name of that app is Shadow.
And it's, really?
Yeah, Shadow. And it's just so funny. It seems like the Democrats just cannot get a handle on the idea of messaging, that they would name their app that's in charge of this caucus Shadow.
As in me and my shadow? What?
And it's shadow government, all the fun that they're going to have on the right-wing talk radio with that name. And it's just amazing to me. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is like the fact that all this technology, look what it's brought us, an economic crash. That part of it was through technology, and then the Boeing crashes, that was because of technology. Now Iowa caucus has crashed because of technology, and now they still want us to have our cars driven by technology. It just seems like a really bad idea. But anyway.
Okay, well thanks, all right. Thanks for the call. I do want to make one thing clear. Technology is a servant, and as long as it's a servant, it can be useful. The problem is when you drive and put all your faith in a technology rather than in rational discourse, rather than thinking things through, then you run into problems.
Right, and without post-industrial technology, you and I would just be sitting in this room talking at each other and nobody would be able to hear.
Well, probably we are just sitting in this room talking.
Yeah, that's
at
entirely
each other.
Possible.
I'm not sure. We either have a large audience or...
Or we don't.
Or we don't, right?
Paulina writes into the Facebook page, the previous caller who mentioned election interference by the DNC may be referring to the fact that, one, they have changed the rules regarding who gets on the debate stage, no small donor requirements, paving the way for Bloomberg to buy his way on. Two, they are discussing rewriting the rules on superdelegates to have more power at the convention.
Right.
They supposedly tried, she has that in quotes, to reduce their power after 2016. All right, let's address this point that a couple of callers and now a writer have alluded to, and that is that... the Democratic National Committee has set up a process for selecting its nominee that is itself inherently undemocratic and subject to influence by the Democratic establishment. And by that, I mean the slightly left of center corporate friendly legions that make up most of the Democratic Party.
Why do you call it left of center? Where is the center then?
I don't know. It's just a convenient appellation.
Oh, okay. If this is the Paulina I know, she's right.
Yeah, she is right. Our own Earl Blumenauer.
Even if she isn't the Paulina I know, yep. She's right.
Our old Earl Blumenauer, for example, is a super delegate in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And at the 2016 convention, cast his vote for Hillary Clinton, despite the fact that Bernie Sanders won overwhelmingly here in Oregon in the Oregon primary.
Right.
So there
there's
you
no
it.
There's no rule requiring that the winner of the local election, the statewide election, will be the representative for all the Democrats at the convention.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So, but the fact is that some delegates have votes that count or weighted much heavier than others.
Right, that's the superdelegate
phenomenon.
Right,
and that's stupid and silly and insulting, and it should end. Let's go to Linda. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I just wanted to say one thing. I was talking about the DNC, whom I've learned to loathe. But, what's with Hillary Clinton coming out and making these statements against Bernie Sanders? I mean, it seems like there's a concerted effort against him.
Mrs. Clinton is very bitter about her situation, and she is tending now to turn on Bernie Sanders because somehow she's fantasizing him to be her enemy. I mean, that's all I see out of that.
That's a nice analysis, but at the same time, it's part of the big machination, I think.
Could be.
You know, of the DNC, and she's deeply involved in that. I don't know. Anyway, that's the one that's disturbed me lately. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. I have to say this. The process of election of a president of the United States has for a long time been, from the beginning, been a weird and not exactly democratic process. Not even close. So now we're seeing the consequences of unfixed processes all through the history of the United States where there have been some improvements. For example, first they didn't require a property right. Then they didn't require that it be a person of Caucasian background. Then they didn't require that it be, and so on and so on. And so we have seen a formalizing extension of the franchise. Mm-hmm. And in 1900 we changed the rules so the election would be at least secret. All of that has been countered by a set of clever, non-democratic things done by political parties and by the ruling class.
Yeah.
So here we are. Now, the outcome of that unintended consequence, but bizarrely fitting with the interests of the ruling class, is the creation of the Nazi presidency. Yeah. And we have to say it's the Nazi presidency.
Now, speaking of the ruling class, and a caller mentioned Mike Bloomberg a couple of calls ago.
Ah, now the liberal ruling class.
Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor, pointed this out yesterday. He said Mike Bloomberg is worth about $60 billion.
Yes.
He earns in interest about $2 billion a year on that $60 billion. And he's using this year's $2 billion to try and buy himself the presidency. Now, that should be repugnant to every citizen anywhere, regardless of Michael Bloomberg's ideology. It's the only reason he was on the last debate stage, for example, is because he bought his way on. And commenters and callers have been pointing this out. We need a selection process that is itself more inherently democratic. For example, instead of the amount of money you're able to spend, maybe it's the number of people who have been willing to pledge themselves to your cause. If there was a way to count those and to make it verifiable, I think that's the path forward. Not how much money you're able to raise, not how much of your own money you're able to bring in and spend, but how many people you can rally to your cause. Now, it's offensive to me that Michael Bloomberg is considered a viable candidate for president simply because he has big pockets. It's nonsense. And frankly, if he was really interested in helping the American body politic, he would take that money and instead of spending it on his own presidential campaign, would use it to support progressive candidates at state and local levels all over the country. That would be a much better use of his billions.
Well, I agree. You know, we're not going to argue about that, but I think that at this stage, in this situation, a lot of us are going to be really grateful if Bloomberg dumps billions of dollars in a campaign to defeat Trump.
Well, I hope that he does. I hope he doesn't just take his football and go home if he doesn't win the Democratic nomination.
I don't think he'll do that.
Okay. I hope you're right. I don't know. What do we do, Joe? What do we do from here?
Let's get one last call.
Charlotte, good morning.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to bring it back to your original subject matter. There are a lot of interesting things to talk about, and you have gotten involved in a lot of other discussions that may have value at another time. But right now, the impeachment process and the actual things that the Democrats are doing are actually trying to deal with the development of an authoritarian system in the United States. Trump is an authoritarian person who is lawless and has used crime, actually, and foreign powers, as well as the massive amount of money he's getting from corporations and rich people. But let's try to keep it in the United States, and let's try to keep it within the law, at least. And I really think that your original subject is really important. All those other things do not compare. Those are things that we can deal with. If we end up with an authoritarian party and an authoritarian power for another 4 years, there will be so much devastation to the environment, to our lives, to even more to the system than we've had in these 3 years so far, which is much more than people realize.
Agreed.
If you actually pay attention to environmental stuff, for example.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I thank you for the call.
Yeah,
I think we've run out of time.
We have.
Hey, that was a nice closer. All right. you all stay tuned to the station. You stay tuned to us, and don't let our rage confuse you.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock. Coming up next on Alternative Radio, Princeton University Assistant Professor Kianga Yamada-Taylor speaks about the power of social movements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th, from 11 a.m. to noon at the Central Library Branch at the Multnomah County Library in Portland. Classical Music Confidential will be hosted by Bruce Charles, and will take a look at Portland's secret classical music past of the 1940s. Again, that's Classical Music Confidential on Monday, February 10th, from 11 a.m. to noon, at the Central Library Branch of the Multnomah County Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The pivot to elections has distracted in some ways from the important task of building the biggest, broadest, and most effective movement possible. The social movement is the mechanism that preserves the interest of